Good morning. We've been discussing the sugya of Nekach Tois. The typical case involved a person went ahead, he bought a car, and he finds out, he thought it was a car, in fact it was a lemon, the transmission didn't work. So that's a pretty clear and straightforward case of Nekach Tois. The seller did not deliver what he promised, and therefore the buyer has the right to demand a full refund. Now, that's a simple case where the item that was purchased was defective. Now, what happens in a case, and this is fairly common, where the item itself is fine, but there's some external factor which makes it that people would not want to buy it. A person buys an apartment. The apartment is wonderful. The problem is the next-door neighbor is a mishugana and spends his day 24/7 banging on the walls. Now, is there something wrong with the apartment? No, the apartment is fine. But nobody would want to purchase such an apartment. You can't live in it because of the constant noise, the constant banging. So what's the halacha in such a case? So there's a surprisingly little Mara Mekoymus about this. But there is a Mishpat Shalom has an interesting case. A person bought a farm. The farm was wonderful. But the problem is that the place where the farm is located, there were no goyim that were willing to work. They were all upper class, a bunch of lawyers, a bunch of accountants, which they're useless if you have a farm. You need someone who's going to schlep the tractor, take care of the horses. And you couldn't run a farm. So Mishpat Shalom paskins that it's a Mekach Tois. Because since you cannot use it, this farm is essentially useless. There's nothing you can do with it. There's no one there to work it. Therefore, I die to the hachi, there's an umdana. No one in such a situation would buy the field, and you have the right to demand a refund. Another interesting example, the Kesef HaKadoshim, deals with a case where a person bought a house, and it turns out it was a haunted house. The three people who had been living there previously had died. And no one wanted to buy the house. Now, it's hard to argue there's something defective with the house. But people were afraid, and anyone who knew the facts would not want to live in such a house. So Kesef HaKadosh and Paskins, it's a Mekach Tois. Since three people did die, there is a chazaka. There is basis for this fear. And people in this area are afraid to move into such a house. Therefore, if you bought it without knowing, you can claim Mekach Tois, and you can get your money back. I don't know how to do when you do a title search. I don't know how to figure out when you have to do a home inspection. A little bit difficult to figure this one out. But the Kesef HaKadosh does paskin, you have the right to void the sale. Now, what these cases teach us is that for Mekach Tois, you do not need, there's a physical or actual defect in the item. As long as, based on the circumstances, a typical person would not want to buy it. There's an umdino, there's an ansadi, a person would not want to buy this property had he known the facts. That is grounds to claim Mekach Tois and to demand a full refund. Now, our sugya this morning is taking this concept to the next level. And that is, what happens if a person buys a property? There's nothing wrong with the property at the time of the sale. But something happens later. And it's the type of the thing that if the buyer realized what was going to happen tomorrow, he would never buy this property. What is the halacha in such a case? So the Gemara in Ksuvos Daf Mem Zayin has a case. Sorry, Kedushin. I'm sorry, where a person sold a property. He sold his house. Almanas to go to Eretz Yisrael. At the closing, he tells the buyer that the reason why I'm selling this property is I'm planning to move to Eretz Yisrael. He sells the property, they have a closing, the buyer buys it. And then a war breaks out, there are pirates, whatever the story is, the seller was not able to move to Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara paskins, the seller has the right to go and undo the deal. I only sold it because I was moving to Eretz Yisrael. I mentioned it at the time of the closing. That's why I'm selling my house. I have the right to undo it. You kick the buyer out, and you take possession of the property. Now, this leads to two very serious problems. The first problem is a conceptual problem. You buy 1,000 shares of Google. I think it's a good investment. Right after you buy it, the stock tanks. It's worthless. Now, had you known that the value would go down, would you have bought the stock? Probably not. Maybe not probably. For sure not. You bought it because you planned on making money. So if we use this Gemara's logic, every time I do a deal and it goes down in value, I should be able to claim Mekartois. I died lucky. Had I known what would happen, I would have never bought it. So where do you draw the line? Good, right? So that's the conceptual question. Now, the second issue we have is more of a technical issue. And that is, we all know there's a parasha of a Tanai. There's something known as a Tanai B'nei Gadu B'nei Ruvain. That Moshe Rabbeinu made a deal with B'nei Gadu B'nei Ruvain that if they would lead the battle to conquer Eretz Yisrael, they would get Eivor L'Yarden, they would get this certain property. Now, if you look where the Torah describes this deal, there's a whole big arichus. And we learn from this that when a person makes a Tanai, when a person does a deal and he wants to make it conditional on something, you get the property, but only if you go to Eretz Yisrael, and if you leave the battle. So there are a bunch of halachos. You need a Tanai Kafel, you need Hein Kaidum Lalav. There's a whole form, there's a whole set of halachos how to make a Tanai. And if you don't follow this form, the Tanai is batal. The only way you can say this deal depends on the conditions that I set is if you follow these rules. Now, L'chaira, in our Gemara, where you just sold a house and you mentioned at the closing about I'm selling it because I'm planning on moving to Eretz Yisrael, there's no Tanai, there's no Tanai Kafel, Hein Kaidum Lalav. You didn't follow any of the rules. So how is it that simply because you didn't make it to Eretz Yisrael, you have the right to back out? Now, to make this question, to bring it down to a practical level, whenever people do deals, very often, there's a whole conversation. The seller and buyer, they discuss a lot of things. If the halacha is, whatever a person mentions while they're talking about the deal suddenly becomes a tanai, then many, if not most, of Mekachu Memkar would be batal. For example, I had a case last week. A person was buying a house on paper. So he went ahead, he was negotiating with the builder, and they, there was a certain price, and the buyer at some point said, you know what, I'm not in a rush, I still have a small family, I don't need such a big house. I'll wait a couple of months, I'll wait until you build it, the development is ready, and then at my leisure, I'll decide what to do. The builder tells him, I wouldn't do that if I were you, because this is phase one. Phase one is the lowest price. When I build phase two, once the development is up, then I'm going to raise my price. So if you don't act now, then you're not going to be able to get it at this price. Buyer said, okay. So he went ahead and he signed. 6 months later, the house is now built. They're about to close. And the buyer discovers that the builder is now selling phase two. And he's selling it at a $40,000 discount. So he's saying, I only agreed to the deal because you told me this is the best price, and the price is going up. Now that the price went down, I never agreed to this. I want to be able to back out. So what's the halacha? Does he have the right to do that because he mentioned it at the closing or while they were talking, or not? Now, one last case. There's another Gemara that seems to say even to the other extreme. The halacha is if a person hears... No. At this point, everyone is being down with Kav Skos, everyone's getting the benefit, giving him the benefit of the doubt. The market changed. But in Eretz Yisrael, at the time the Moicher sold it, he planned on going to Eretz Yisrael. Something changed afterwards. Now, one last Gemara, the halacha is that if a person hears his son goes overseas, and he hears the news that Nebuch, his son, was Nifter. So what he did is, he went ahead, he gave away all of his assets. He had no Yarshim left, this is an only child. Once his son was dead, he gave away his assets. He then finds out that Baruch Hashem, the rumor was not true, his son was alive and well. So halacha is, he has the right to call back the recipient and say, I want everything that I gave you back. Because the halacha is, although he gave it, he didn't make any conditions, there was no tonight, there was nothing. Still, since it's obvious, had he, if not for the fact that he heard that he mistakenly believed that his son had died, he would have never done it. There's an umdana, there's an ansadi, that if he knew his child was alive, he would have never given away these assets. The halacha is, he can demand them back. So this Gemara seems to say that even if you didn't mention anything, as long as we know that this is a mistake, you wouldn't have done it had you known the truth, you're entitled to undo the deal. So what's the halacha? How do we deal with these situations? When do you need a tanai? Can you automatically back out? And when do you need this gilui das where you have to say something but you don't need it tonight?
Does it make a difference if the assets are
there?
Let's say the recipient already spent it.
No? Shouldn't? You get it back? You get it? No? You should be able to get it back.
But the son, what right do you
have
to give it away?
No. The father gave away his assets. Since he didn't have a yoirish, he gave away his own assets. Exactly. So what the Rishayim explain is, there are three different levels. On one hand, there's a concept of dvarim shebelev eno dvarim. If you go ahead and you buy a car, you take it home, and the next day you call the seller back and say, you know what, I only bought the car because I had a job offer. I had to commute for this new job. And because of that, I needed a second car, so I bought a car. Now that the job offer dried up, I want to undo the deal. Now, halacha is nothing doing. Dvarim shebelev eno dvarim. Your internal calculations, your cheshbonos, are not relevant to the deal. You went ahead, you bought the car, you didn't say anything, you didn't make any tanai, you didn't make any conditions. We don't care what's going on in your mind. We look at what was said, and the deal is a deal. If you want to override that, if you want to buy the car, but you want to make it that if it turns out that your job offer dries up, you can return it, you need a tanai. You have to follow the rules. Because to take a sale and to make it conditional on your circumstances, that is where we have a parasha of Tnoim. Again, Hein Kadnu Lalav, Tnai Kafu, you'll have to follow all the rules. That's in a case where it's your internal, your personal calculations. You don't need this car unless you get this job offer. Many people who buy cars buy it because either they want another car or there can be many reasons. Your personal thoughts, your personal calculations cannot void a sale unless you made it tonight. The other extreme, the second level, is when there's an anan sadi. A person who gives away all of his assets, no one does it without a good reason. And therefore, if a person suddenly gives away all of his assets, then even without asking him, we know that he's giving it away and all that because Nebuchadnezzar, he thinks he has no yarshim. And therefore, in such a case, where he believed his son had died, and it turns out that it's untrue, there is an anan sadi. Everyone knows, without asking him, that had he known the truth, he would have never done it. It's not his internal personal calculation. It's something which we know without asking him. It's something that everyone recognizes, and therefore you don't need it tonight. There's an anan sadi, it's an umdana, and you can always back out of such a deal because you would have never done it, and it's clear you would have never done it had you known the facts. Our Gemara is a middle madrega. In our Gemara, you sold the house because you plan to move to Eretz Yisrael. So halacha is, if you mention it, you say that I'm selling it to move to Eretz Yisrael, you can back out even though there was no tanach. So Taisus explains, people back then did not sell houses. It wasn't like today where real estate is a booming business or was a booming business. People bought a house, and that's what they lived in the same house their entire life. In Hilchos Yerusha, you find there are special halachas of Havaras Nachla. People did not buy and sell property. If a person did sell a property, it was highly unusual. And there's a chazaka, chances are he's planning on moving out of town, and that's why he's selling. Because there's a chazaka that he's selling it to move out of town, if he is Megale Das, if he tells the buyer, I am selling it because I'm in fact planning to move to Eretz Yisrael, you don't need a regular tonight. When there's a chazaka that tells us there's a reason for this, you're moving out of town, and you say specifically at the closing, I'm selling because I'm moving out of town, That's enough. You don't need a Tanai. When there's no chazaka, you're buying a car. There's no chazaka why people buy cars. So then, if you want to make the car conditional on your job, you need a mishpatei hatanah. In the other extreme, when a person gives away his assets, no one does that. So if you do it, and then you claim that you thought that the child had died, and now you find out otherwise, you don't even need a gilui das, you can always back out. It's this middle case, where there's a chazaka. People normally don't sell property unless they're moving. Then you need a gilui das, but a gilui das would be enough. So let's try to translate this into a few practical cases. The first case that we discussed, where a person signed on a house, and he said at the time that he was signing the contract that he's doing it because he expects the price to go up. So what is that? Which level does it fall under? Is there an anansadi that nobody would buy a house if the price will go down? I don't think so. Many people buy houses, they need a place to live. So it could be this person wasn't in a rush, he didn't care. But you can't say there's an anansadi, no one would buy a house if they knew the future. The second level you probably don't have either. Is there a chazaka that people wouldn't buy a house? I'm not so sure. Okay, that's true. That is true. But in this case, the seller believed it. And he was saying that in phase two, the price always goes up. This is the first time the market turned, and he was forced to lower his price. But the presumption is it was said in good faith. The truth be told, there's a chavis yor that deals with, which is a very common case. You're selling a house. You're asking $400,000. Someone comes in and puts an offer for $350,000. So very often, the seller will say, $350,000? I already have two other offers for $370,000. If you want the house, you're going to have to bid higher. So he did that. The buyer fell for it. He bid $380,000 and closed on the house. Afterwards, after he closed, he called up these people who had purportedly put in the offer for $370,000. And they said, Lahadam, we never put in an offer. So the buyer came back to the seller and said, listen, I only bid $380,000. Because you told me Yankel bid $370,000. If it's not true, I want my money back. So the Chavis Yor paskins that although the seller certainly did Shaloi Kedin, it's Gnevis Das, he lied to him, but you can't back out of the deal. Because there's no Anan Sadi that had you known the truth, you wouldn't have offered $380,000. Had the seller told you, listen, this is the story, $380,000, take it or leave it, I'm not budging. It's very possible you would have bought it. The tactic that he used is he decided to lie to you. He misrepresented. He said there's a higher offer. But we don't know what would have happened had he not done that. And since there's no anan tzadi, there's no chazaka, you would not have the right to void the deal. Now the Chavis Yor does say if you didn't pay yet, you can back out. Because he said you can say kimli that you wouldn't have done it, and it's a chiddush. There's a taz in Shin Lamed Beis that seems to say not like that, and there's a nesivas there. So it'll be if you're a muchzik, perhaps there'll be a kimli. But certainly after the fact, even though the seller lied, unless the buyer can prove that if not for the lie, would have never put in that offer, he's stuck. No, he can. That case was he wanted to undo the deal. Fine, but that didn't happen. There's no kinyan. There was no mekach u'memkar on $350,000. So the fact that he would have agreed to that is not relevant today. There was a kinyan. There was he gave the money. Something was done. It was enough that normally it's time you couldn't back out, or even better, he made a kinyan, but he was holding on to the money. So even though he made a kinyan, he's still a muksik. He can say a kinyan. What? Okay, that's deposits is another whole shmuz. Yes. So the Marashdam points out, it's really a Marashal, that the case has to be, if he just changes his mind, he can't back out of the deal. The case has to be where he can't make it to Eretz Yisrael. A war breaks out. There are Ganovim on the way. You can't make it there. It's an oinus. If it's you just change your mind, that's not grounds to void the sale. Now the Marsham adds, actually it's a Marshal, that he adds also another knach, and that is, it has to be, you have to prove not only that you couldn't make it, but that it wasn't your fault. If you delayed, or if somehow you caused the problem, then you can't go back to the seller and demand a refund.
Let's say something like illness, for example, that would be good enough.
That Pashas would be good enough. Again, we'll get to a Nesivas a little bit later, but Pashas, that would be enough to back out. Okay, so yeah, you'll have to deal with, you know, with whether it's a legitimate reason or not. Has to be a real reason. If you just change your mind and you hang it on the fact on, you know, that there's an Ariba Derech, or who knows, you know, there's always a risk in traveling. So obviously that's not enough. But if there's something new and it makes it that a person can't go. So now let's go back and deal with the conceptual problem. Tosfos asks Akasha on this concept. And he wants to know like this. He wants to know, every time a person buys a cow, so if it dies the next day, why can't he back out and say, Adai, had I known it would die the next day, I would have never bought it. So again, in the same case when you're buying, if you buy an investment that goes down in value, why can't I use this argument? Now in this case, there's an umduna. Nobody invests money to lose. So this should be the highest level, where even without saying anything, since no one buys things, makes an investment to lose money, so Tosfos asks, I should have the right to back out, because I died to the Hoche, I would have never gone into the deal. But he wouldn't, again, in Eretz, when you sell a house, there is a risk you won't make it to Eretz Yisrael, but if the risk comes true, you have the right to back out. What do you mean? Okay, fine, good. Good. Mishpat Shalom says, and the Nesivos say along your lines, we'll get there. So Tosfos answers like this. Tosfos says, you're right. As an investor, if I knew the stock was going to crash tomorrow, I'm not going to buy it. But when I'm buying something, there are two parties. There's the buyer and the seller. If I want to make a tenai, if I want to make an umduna, it has to be something that both parties would accept. If you go to the seller and say, listen, I'd like to buy 1,000 shares of Google, but if it goes down, I want my money back. Is he going to sell it to you? Obviously not. He's selling it because he wants to get rid of the risk. So, Zog Tosfos Bishlam, in a case where you give away a present, person who hears that his son died, he gives everything away. You give away a present. Anyway, if you go to the recipient and tell him, listen, I'm giving you this present, but you should know, if my information is incorrect, I'm going to take back the present. So what's the recipient going to say? Great, I'll take it. Worst comes to worst, I'll give it back to you. So Zog Tosfos, in that case, you have an umduna, no problem. But if I'm buying something, I have to deal with both parties. And it's very nice the buyer doesn't want to buy it if it goes down in value. The seller is not going to sell it to you all tonight. So since there are two parties involved, and the seller is not interested in assuming the risk, in such a case, we do not say an umduna, and if the buyer wants to shift the risk back to the seller, he has to speak it out. Otherwise, we say that it's a risk. And as you pointed out, when people do business, there's always a risk in business, and the buyer, when he's investing, knows, I'm investing, hopefully I'll make money, but it's possible that I'll lose money. But since there's a counterparty, that counterparty wouldn't have accepted the risk. There, we have to deal with him. If you would want to speak it out, yes. There's no chazaka that people don't buy to lose because everyone else buys and they take that risk. So what it comes out is like this: it depends on the case. If you have a case where it's true, no one wants to lose money. But many people do deals knowing that there's a risk involved, and that maybe they'll win, maybe they'll lose. So in such a case, there's no umduna. You either need a gilui das or you need a tanai, depending on the situation. It's only in a case like the Gemara where you give away your assets, where no one would go into it if they even knew there was a risk. The person giving away is only giving away because he's not entertaining the fact that the rumor isn't true. Had he known that it might be true, he just wouldn't have done it. And the recipient also, he has no problem accepting these terms. There, we can say an ansadi, and there, you don't need it tonight, you don't need anything else.
What about the case is there, what the guy
It's true. That's a good point. It's in Alpi Pashtus, I would say that it's not in Nekach Tois. There is an Imre Yoshe that deals with it really from the sugya that we had today that says perhaps it's a Kimli. Because of the case of the ships with the water. But a Parshup Shot, you would say, that doesn't change anything. So let's deal with the following scenario. A person is about to get engaged, goes into a jewelry store, and buys a diamond ring for his soon-to-be fiancée. He buys her the ring, the next day he proposes, and she says, absolutely not. He goes back to the store, and he says, listen, I bought this ring, and I told you at the time that I bought the ring, I'm buying it because I'm getting engaged tomorrow. Now, Bachrim have absolutely no use for a diamond ring unless they're getting engaged. Now that it turns out that it is untrue, I should have the right to back out. So what's the halacha? So l'chayra, this should be a case where if there's a gilu yadas, as long as it's clear that he's buying it for a specific young lady, he's not just buying it for in case down the road he gets engaged, he'll have a ring in hand, but l'chayra, he should be able to back out and get a refund. Now before, we'll get back to this case shortly, but There's a sugi brought in Bavas or Daf Tzadiches, which a lot of interesting kolam come from this sugi, which is relevant to us. The Gemara over there has a case where it's a question of the girsa, but according to many, the case was you bought wine, you bought it in order to sell it at a profit, and after you bought it, before you had a chance to bring it and to sell it, the price collapsed. The buyer claimed Mekach Tois, and he wanted a refund. So it is an Al-Chagis Rishayim, but according to many Rishayim, he'll prevail. You can claim Mekach Tois. Since you bought it only to sell it at a profit, it went the price dropped, you have the right to bring it back, you're entitled to a full refund. Now the Nesivus is very disturbed by these Rishayim. Why is this different than Tosfos? If you buy a shor and it dies the next day, you're stuck. Even though no one wants to buy a shor that'll die the next day, since there's a seller involved, and he's not, and you need his dat haskama also, unless you make it tonight, you're stuck with it. On the other hand, this Gemara, according to these Rishonim, is saying that if you buy the wine and the price collapses, you can return it. So what's the difference between these cases? So Nesivus has a few answers. His first answer is that when you buy the shor and it dies, so if you come back to the seller and say that, you know what, this is all a mistake. Had I known it would die, I wouldn't have bought it. Here, take the dead carcass, give me back my full refund. The seller is losing money now. Yesterday he had a shor. Today, you're giving him back a dead animal and asking for all of his money back. The seller is suffering a loss. Zuckling and Siva is in such a case, that's where Taisva says, you can't back out. However, if you buy the wine, the seller had the wine. You bought it. You know, the next day the market crashes, you bring it back. Did the seller lose anything? He's got the same wine today that he had yesterday. Had you not bought it, what would have happened? The price would have crashed when he would have been holding on to it. Zakat v'nesivus, since there is no hefzid in this case, that's why you can claim that I died to the hoche, I wouldn't have bought it. When something changed, if it's yours, if the wine spoils, something happened to the wine, there you can't make this argument because it's not called a hefsid. Now all the business people in the room are making scowls and aren't very happy with the svara. So you'll be happy to hear that Mishpat Shalom also has your issue. And he says, if you have wine worth $10 a barrel, and the next day you have wine worth $3 a barrel, that's called a hefsid. Had he not bought it, you would have sold it to end users. You would have found something else to do with it. Mishpat Shalom argues and says it's called a hefsid. But the Nesivus says, since you didn't technically lose something, had you had the wine, you would have had the same loss. He says you'd have the right to back out.
But in the case of the shor, where it dies the day after the moicher purchases it, right? So if it was the moicher, they called the shor to die?
Okay, excellent. So it's like this. The Nesivus suggests another chiluk. He says it depends what caused the problem. If you buy wine, if you buy Google, and the next day it tanks, we can't blame you for the fact the whole market crashed. You're an important person, but bottom line is, your 1,000 shares is not what did in Google. Your mazel is not that bad. So in such a case, You have the right to go to the seller and say, you know, as long as there's no hefsid, and say, I want my money back. However, Zakhni Nesivus, if you buy a shor and the shor died, the moicher can say, you're a shlamazel. Mazlecha agaram. It was nigzar from Shemaim, you should lose money. Your shor, it died when you had it, your loss don't come back to me. It's only when it's a makas medina, when it's something which is where it happened to the whole market, there we can't blame you, that's when you're entitled to a refund. Another point that Nesivus makes is that this is only true when you do not have the opportunity to have hana from the purchase. You buy the shor, and literally on your way home, lightning strikes, it drops dead. Once you have any opportunity to use it, even if you don't, but you have the opportunity to be nana from it, you lose all your claims. Because the deal was, there was a moment where the deal made sense, you can't avoid it afterwards. In the case of the wine, the case that Nesivus is going on happens to be where, you know, where he bought it specifically to bring it to another area, you know, to export it, and he didn't have the opportunity yet to get it to that place. Well, if it depends where the market. If it was already dropping, then it, but you're right. But if it went up for a moment and then it crashed, certainly there'll be no havamina, there'll be a claim. It'll only be relevant if, you know, from the time you bought it, it was a steep decline. Okay, if it goes up for a second, or in a case of okay, the hefts and the nesivus, yeah. So according to the nesivus, seems to hold in chanami. Then if there's no mazlech agaram, there was never a moment he could have been nene from it. Then he says, then you're stuck.
Now,
oh, so what the Mishpat Shalom says, and again, it's similar to the other point that he argues in the nesivus. Is he says, it's one thing if something crazy happens. The Nesivus' case that he's dealing with, he actually has an interesting case that there are many tshuvas about this case, but apparently there was a war going on in the Nesivus' time. And when you're waging a war, one of the big ish problems the kings had is they had to feed their army. And the army is, you know, traveling. They had to buy food. They had to buy huge quantities of food. And therefore, the kings used to pay through their nose to support their army. So a king signed a contract with a supplier to buy a huge amount of wheat at a very high premium. The supplier didn't have everything in stock. So he went to other people, he showed them the contract, and said, I need to fill this contract, and he bought from them also a tremendous volume of wheat at a premium. Sure enough, the king lost the war, the army was in retreat, and the king wasn't buying the wheat anymore. Zok the Nesivus, the supplier has the right to back out of his contract, he is not mechuyev to buy the wheat. Since when he bought it, he sold the person the contract and said, I'm buying it for the king. And he paid a price that only made sense if you're buying it for a king. So there we say, if the king wouldn't buy it, if he lost the war, you have no right to force him. So Mishpat Shalom points out that he argues in this case, because he says like this, when you're dealing with kings and armies, the inherent risk that you're taking is, it's very nice if the king wins, you'll make a big profit. If the king loses the war, you're up the creek. So he says, in such a case, when you sign contracts with the government that's in the middle of a war, that's a risk that you're taking. And therefore, the Mishpat Shalom says, the same thing is true if you buy a stock and it goes up or it goes down, a normal market fluctuation. He says, that's a risk that you're taking. And he says, as a davar pashut, there's no way you'd be able to claim mekach toyes under any of these circumstances. The whole discussion only starts when something unusual happens. It wasn't a risk that was inherent in the deal. And if you look at the Aruch HaShulchan that we had in the Maror Mekoyimus, he says a very similar point. Mekach u'memkar, people are doing commerce, there are certain risks associated with doing business. The Aruch HaShulchan says, the case of the Gemara, you're selling property, we mentioned before, people didn't buy or sell property as a real estate investment. You sold the property when you were moving out of town, that was it. So in such a case, whoever bought the property planned on moving in, so now he's going to have to find another house. There we can deal with svaros of umdana, yes, no, back and forth. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, when you're doing a business deal, and it's understood, the buyer and seller, they're all taking risks, and they're just trying to do commerce, he says, none of these svaros would apply. Now, not everyone agrees. This is the Aruch HaShulchan. The Mishpat Shalom basically also agrees to the Aruch HaShulchan in virtually all cases. But the Nesivos, the Beis Ephraim, and a number of other tshuvos are not so quick to throw out this svara. So you're going to have to look at each case. Now, if you go back to the case of the diamond ring, where he bought it as an engagement and his fiancée dumped him. So according to the Nesivos, this is very similar to a case where you bought it for an army, where since it was clear you bought it for a specific purpose and you weren't able to use it, according to the Nesivos, you'd have the right to back out. Now, what you'd have to really deal with is the other svara of the Nesivos. And that is, Nesivos' other svara was whenever the seller can say, mazlecha gara, it's your bad mazel that caused the problem, you lose your right to claim echatois. So Bishlam, the case of the army, where the king lost the war, so it's hard to blame that on the buyer's mazel. So if the war was lost, the king's not buying the wheat, the buyer will be able to back out. On the other hand, in a case where she dumped him, that l'chayra is his mazel. It's not the seller's fault that the shidduch didn't work out. This is very much the mazel of the buyer. So in such a case, according to the svar of the Nesivos, l'chayra, you would not have any claim of mechak tois. Now, based on that, going back to the Gemara of going to Eretz Yisrael, it has to be also a makas medina. There's a war. There are pirates on the way. Something happens that would stop everyone. But if it's a personal issue, if it's not something that would impact everyone, according to these svaros, you would not have the right to back out. Okay, so let's change the case. He was already engaged. He went and bought the ring, and then she broke off the shidduch. She broke it off. So in that case, so there is an umdana. He only bought the ring for her. But still, if you go with the svar of mazlecha goram, then he would be stuck paying for the ring, even though he has no use for it. Well, again, it's his mazel. He's the one that paid for it, and it's his mazel. He got stuck with a very pricey, rock. What? Shars don't have mazel. That goes with the owner. So there's no specific time frame. The Marshal does say if you had an opportunity to go and you didn't, then you blew it. But if the process back then, they went by boat, it took 6 months, whatever it is, and you did everything you were supposed to, and then it didn't work, there's no time frame. You can come back a few years later. It's not a question of time frame. It's a question of were you negligent by waiting or not. As long as you did what you were supposed to do, then you would be able to claim. Now, hold on. Just to go back to the case of the ring, another factor is the Nesivos points out that you only say these svaras when the seller won't suffer a loss. Since he won't suffer a loss, the buyer has the right to say, I want a refund. If you order the ring and you had the seller cut it down to size or to mount it and put it on where there'll be a hefsid, there, according to the Nesivos, l'kuliyam, you can't back out. Because that's, again, like the case of the shor, where since the seller is not going to assume a risk, then we do not say these svaras. And therefore, since, again, in that where if there is a hefsid, if the seller had to custom order something or custom make something, then this entire discussion would not be relevant.
He buys a ring for a certain purpose. I'll deny that she will accept it.
No, not the way. If you make a tonight, if you make a tonight,
buying this ring to give to this girl.
So again, if you make a tonight.
So number one, there was this purpose for which she bought it. Number two, even if it is depreciated, she should at least be allowed to buy it.
So if there was a tanai, if he bought it, said, I'm buying it specifically to give to this young lady, and if it doesn't work out, I'm going to return it. So that's a tanai, a davar shel mamon, that will work. Our whole discussion, if there's no tanai, he didn't say this is conditional, but it's understood. People, had he known that she wouldn't accept or she would break the shidduch, he wouldn't have bought it. So there, in such a case, we have all these conditions. And to the extent the conditions are not met, to the extent that you're causing the seller a loss, he has no responsibility to take it back. I mean, it's very nice for him to take it back and minus the restocking fee, but you can't force him because there was no tanai, and he never agreed to assume this risk. So that's what we had. There are two different madregos. In a normal case, you need a tanai kafa. However, in a case where there's a when you sell it al monastigo at Eretz Yisrael, where there's a chazaka, people do not sell property unless they're leaving, via a gilui das is enough. Right, a ring, I would say there is a chazaka, people buy rings to give it to, you know, people buy diamond rings to give it to their kala. So in that case, a gilui das should be enough. Correct. I will just, in as far as Mishpat Hayatanon, there is, a, you know, again, it's not for now, but there is a Nesivos and Ateres Tzvi that says today the minhag is not to need all the rules of Mishpat Hayatanon. Anyone here who's signing the contract, there are probably many contingencies, it probably did not have a Tanai B'nai Gadu B'nai Ruvain. So he says, at least for Metatl in the minhag is not to need a Tanai, and today it's probably for Karka as well. But that's different Shmuz.
There's a difference between the case of Eretz Yisrael, and let's say the case of either for a person purchases a house or a car because he has a job. He says clear, I've got a job and I need another car, or I have a job in this city, therefore I want to buy your house. If the job falls through, It's clear. That's not an anatsadi that he's not going to need a house or a car in that city or
In the case of a house, no one bought and sold property unless they were moving. That was the fact, where it was extremely rare. So there's a chazaka. Because there's a chazaka, gilui das is enough. Now, people buy cars for other reasons. Now, it's true, perhaps his primary motivation, the excuse that he gave his wife why he's spending so much money is because he has this new job. But we do not have a chazaka telling us if not for the job, he wouldn't have bought it.
He could,
even if he makes a tanai, wonderful. But if he just mentions as he's buying the car that, yes, I need it because of this job. Do we know, or do we have a chazaka, that if not for the job, he's not buying the car? There's no chazaka. In such a case, you would need a tanai. Fine, but because many, that's true, but because many people buy cars for other reasons, many customers come in, they want to buy a car because their old car is, you know, doesn't have all the new tachkolach and they like driving new cars, they buy a new car. So it's true this person has his internal cheshbon, but your personal reasons need a tanai kafal, or need a mishpat hayatanon. It's only when you're doing something where either there's an anansadi, we know what you're doing it for, or there's a chazaka. If the mitzias was, if you lived in a place where people only buy second cars because they have a job that commutes, if that's the normal thing, and otherwise normal people do not do it, then a gilui das would be enough. Your yediyah does not make a tanai unless there is a chazaka. That is what you need Mishpat HaTanon for. If he expects you to refund his money, if the job doesn't work out, he has an obligation to say, I'm buying it on this tanai. And if this doesn't go through, then I'm undoing the deal. If he doesn't make the tanai, the fact that you and I can figure out what he's thinking is not relevant. That's Dvarim Shebelev. So it's a bit. So just like someone who mentions at closing, I'm buying it because the price is going to go up. It's not a tanai. It's his calculate. It's his cheshbon. We have no raya that if this cheshbon does not pan out, he would not buy it. Maybe he'd buy it anyway for other reasons. So the same thing would be true here, unless there's a chazaka. Okay, so this is Mirtz Hashem, the last year on Nechach Tois. Next week we will Mirtz Hashem start the sugya of Adam Hamazik. We'll be dealing with right of way issues, car accidents, backing into people when you're leaving shul, and similar issues. Oh yes, next week it will be CLE certified for anyone who that makes a difference for.